Love language number 3, receiving gifts.
Several years ago, when I was studying anthropology, I took an anthropology field trip to the island of Dominica. Our purpose was to study the culture of the Carib Indians, and on the trip, I met Fred. Fred was not a Carib, but a young black man of 28 years. Fred had lost a hand in a fishing by dynamite accident. Since the accident, he could not continue his fishing career. He had plenty of available time, and I welcomed his companionship. We spent hours together talking about his culture. Upon my first visit to Fred's house, he said to me, "Mr. Gary, would you like to have some juice?" To which I responded enthusiastically. He turned to his younger brother and said, "Go get Mr. Gary some juice." His brother turned, walked down the dirt path, climbed a coconut tree, and returned with a green coconut. "Open it," Fred commanded. With 3 swift movements of the machete, his brother uncorked the coconut, leaving a triangular-shaped hole at the top. Fred handed me the coconut and said, "Juice for you." It was green, but I drank it, all of it, because I knew it was a gift of love. I was his friend, and to friends, you give juice. At the end of our weeks together, as I prepared to leave that small island, Fred gave me a final token of his love. It was a crooked stick, 14 inches in length, which he had taken from the ocean. It was silky smooth from pounding upon the rocks. Fred said that the stick had lived on the shores of Dominica for a long time, and he wanted me to have it as a reminder of the beautiful island. Even today, when I look at that stick, I can almost hear the sound of the Caribbean waves. But it is not as much a reminder of Dominica as it is a reminder of love. A gift is something you can hold in your hand and say, "Look, he was thinking of me," or "she remembered me." You must be thinking of someone to give him a gift. The gift itself is a symbol of that thought. It doesn't matter whether it costs money. What is important is you thought of him and acted upon the thought by actually securing the gift and giving it as an expression of love. Mothers remember the days their children bring a flower from the yard as a gift. They feel loved, even if it was a flower they didn't want picked. From early years, children are inclined to give gifts to their parents, which may be another indication that gift-giving is fundamental to love. Gifts come in all sizes, colors, and shapes. Some are expensive, and others are free. To the individual whose primary love language is receiving gifts, the cost of the gift will matter little unless it is greatly out of line with what you can afford. If a millionaire gives only dollar gifts regularly, the spouse may question whether that is an expression of love. But when family finances are limited, a dollar gift may speak $1 million worth of love. But what of the person who says, "I'm not a gift giver. I didn't receive many gifts growing up. I never learned how to select gifts. It doesn't come naturally for me." Congratulations. You have just made the first discovery in becoming a great lover. You and your spouse speak different love languages. Now that you have made that discovery, get on with the business of learning your second language. If your spouse's primary love language is receiving gifts, you can become a proficient gift giver. In fact, it is one of the easiest love languages to learn. Where do you begin? Make a list of all the gifts your spouse has expressed excitement about receiving through the years. They may be gifts you have given or gifts given by other family members or friends. The list will give you an idea of the kind of gifts your spouse would enjoy receiving. If you have little or no knowledge about selecting the kinds of gifts on your list, recruit the help of a family member who knows your spouse. In the meantime, select gifts that you feel comfortable purchasing, making, or finding, and give them to your spouse. Don't wait for a special occasion. If receiving gifts is his or her primary love language, almost anything you give will be received as an expression of love. By the way, if she has been critical of your gifts in the past, and almost nothing you have given has been acceptable, then receiving gifts is almost certainly not her primary love language. If you're to become an effective gift giver, you may have to change your attitude about money. Each of us has an individualized perception of the purposes of money, and we have various emotions associated with spending it. Some of us have a spending orientation. We feel good about ourselves when we're spending money. Others have a saving and investing perspective. We feel good about ourselves when we're saving money and investing it wisely. If you're a spender, you will have little difficulty purchasing gifts for your spouse. But if you are a saver, you will experience emotional resistance to the idea of spending money as an expression of love. You don't purchase things for yourself. Why should you purchase things for your spouse? But that attitude fails to recognize that you are purchasing things for yourself. By saving and investing money, you are purchasing self-worth and emotional security. You are caring for your own emotional needs and the way you handle money. What you're not doing is meeting the emotional needs of your spouse. If you discover that your spouse's primary love language is receiving gifts, then perhaps you will understand that purchasing gifts for him or her is the best investment you can make. You are investing in your relationship and filling your spouse's emotional love tank. And with a full love tank, he or she will likely reciprocate emotional love to you in a language you will understand. There is an intangible gift that sometimes speaks more loudly than a gift that can be held in one's hands. I call it the gift of self, or the gift of presence. Being there when your spouse needs you speaks loudly to the one whose primary love language is receiving gifts. I remember a conversation I once had with Jan, and later with her husband. Jan began our dialogue.
"My husband loves softball more than he loves me."
"Why do you say that?"
"Well, on the day our baby was born, Don played softball. I was lying in the hospital all afternoon while he was at a game."
"Was he there when the baby was born?"
"Oh, yes. He stayed long enough for the baby to be born, but 10 minutes afterward, he was at the softball field. I mean, I was devastated. It was such an important moment in our lives, and I wanted us to share it together. I wanted him to be there with me. He deserted me for a game."
That husband may have sent her a dozen roses, but they would not have spoken as loudly as his presence in the hospital room beside her. I could tell that Jan was deeply hurt by that experience. The baby was now 15 years old, and she was talking about the event with all the emotion as though it happened yesterday. I probed further. "Have you based your conclusion that Don loves softball more than he loves you on this one experience?"
"Oh, no. On the day of my mother's funeral, he also played softball."
"Did he go to the funeral?"
"Oh, yes, he went to the funeral. But as soon as it was over, he left to play a game. I couldn't believe it. My brothers were there, my sisters were there, my family was there. But my husband was playing softball."
Later, I asked Don about these two events. He knew exactly what I was talking about.
"Yeah, I knew she'd bring that up. I was there through all the labor, and when the baby was born, I took pictures. I was so happy, I couldn't wait to tell the guys on the team. But my bubble was burst when I got back to the hospital that evening. She was furious with me. I couldn't believe what she was saying. I thought she'd be proud of me for telling the team. And when her mother died, she probably didn't tell you that the week before she died, I helped out at the hospital and around the house. After she died and the funeral was over, I felt I'd done all I could do. I needed a breather. I like to play softball, and I knew that that would help me relax and relieve some of the stress I've been under. I thought she'd want me to take a break. I had done what I thought was important to her, but it wasn't enough. She's never let me forget those 2 days. She says I love softball more than I love her. That's ridiculous."
Don was a sincere husband who failed to understand the tremendous power of presence. His being there for his wife was more important than anything else in her mind. Physical presence in the time of crisis is the most powerful gift you can give if your spouse's primary love language is receiving gifts. Your body becomes the symbol of your love. Remove the symbol, and the presence of love evaporates. In counseling, Don and Jan worked through the hurts and misunderstandings of the past. Eventually, Jan was able to forgive him, and Don came to understand why his presence was so important to her. If the physical presence of your spouse is important to you, I urge you to verbalize that to your spouse. Don't expect him to read your mind. If, on the other hand, your spouse says to you, "I really want you to be there with me tonight, tomorrow, or this afternoon," take his request seriously. Almost everything ever written on the subject of love indicates that at the heart of love is the spirit of giving. All five love languages challenge us to give to our spouse. But for some, receiving gifts, visible symbols of love, speaks the loudest. I heard the most graphic illustration of that truth in Chicago, where I met Jim and Janice. They attended my marriage seminar and agreed to take me to O'Hare Airport after the seminar on Saturday afternoon. There, Janice told me they had first attended 3 years earlier, and because of that first seminar, Jim's behavior had been changed radically. He had become a gift giver. After the first seminar, he returned from work on Monday afternoon with a rose. On Tuesday, he called her from the office and asked her if he could bring home a pizza for dinner, saying he thought she might enjoy a break from cooking. Janice, of course, was delighted with the idea, and the children loved the pizza and thanked their father for bringing it. On Wednesday, he brought each of the children a box of Cracker Jacks, and he had a small potted plant for Janice. He said he knew the rose would die, and he thought his wife might like something that would be around for a while. Janice, who remembered her husband as being methodical and unresponsive, could not believe what she was seeing. As she told me, "I was beginning to think I was hallucinating. I couldn't believe what Jim was doing or why he was doing it." The gifts continued that week. Thursday night, after dinner, he handed her a card with a message about his not always being able to express his love to her, but hoping that the card would communicate how much he cared. On Saturday night, he set up a babysitter and took his wife to dinner. Prior to this, Jim had not given her a flower since their wedding day. When a confused Janice asked him why the change, Jim replied that he had realized after the lecture on love languages that her love language was gifts. As Jim later told me, "I also realized that I had not given her a gift in years, maybe not since we'd been married. I remembered that when we were dating, I used to bring her flowers and other small gifts, but after the marriage, I figured we couldn't afford that. I told her that I had decided that I was going to try to get her a gift every day for 1 week and see if it made any difference in her." Jim then admitted that he had seen a big difference in her attitude during the week. The smiles, the thank yous, the hugs, the kisses. Since then, he has continued to give her at least one gift a week, every week, for the past 3 years. I turned to Jim and asked, "But what about you, Jim? Do you feel loved by Janice?" "Oh, I've always felt loved by her, Dr. Chapman. She's the best housekeeper in the world. She's an excellent cook. She keeps my clothes washed and ironed. She is wonderful about doing things for the children. I know she loves me." He smiled and said, "Now you know what my love language is, don't you?" I did. It's the fourth love language, which we will talk about in the next chapter.